Hello, everyone. My name is Frank Napolitani. I'm the Chief Business Development and Marketing Officer at Sword & Kitzel, and today I'm joined by Nick Katsanos, a partner in our Business Transactions Group. Nick, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks, Frank.
So today we're going to be discussing M&A deal terms and how they've evolved during the COVID-19 pandemic. And let's kick things off and set the stage here. So clearly, there's been a lot of pressure put on a number of different industries and sectors throughout the world due to the pandemic. And let's discuss how some of these deal terms have evolved. For example, so material adverse effect, or MAEs, how have those been impacted?
Yeah, so one of the many areas of purchase agreements that were affected by the pandemic were material adverse effect or material adverse change clauses, what we often call MAE or MAC clauses. Now, as most know, a common closing condition to any deal is that there hasn't been an MAE to the seller's business prior to closing. The definition of what constitutes an MAE can be highly negotiated. And when the pandemic took hold about a year ago, there were a few high-profile deals where one of the parties to the deal tried to get out of the transaction by claiming that an MAE had occurred. And these were deals which had been signed way before anyone had even heard of COVID. Now, historically, proving that an MAE had occurred had been extremely difficult. But COVID changed all that, and parties were now dealing with a situation where the effects of the pandemic could arguably support such a claim. So as a result, sellers quickly pivoted and started pushing to exclude the effects of the pandemic from the definition of what constitutes an MAE. In other words, even if the pandemic had a really harmful effect on the target business, the sellers were saying the buyer shouldn't be able to claim that as a reason to not go ahead with the deal. Now, buyers resisted that at the beginning of the pandemic, largely because we were all dealing with a great unknown about COVID. I actually had one buyer in a deal I was working on last year in March take the exact opposite approach, and they insisted that the seller should indemnify the buyer for any liabilities caused by COVID to the target business. But as time went on, and as buyers became more knowledgeable of the pandemic's impact, exclusions became more common. So today, it's now very common for the MAE and MAC definitions to specifically exclude the effects of COVID. But buyers are still often trying to tone those exclusions down.
Understood. So why don't we talk about purchase agreements? So obviously, when sellers and buyers, they sign a purchase agreement, the sellers often want to retain flexibility in how they operate the business. And then the buyers want to limit the changes that that potential target can make to the business. Can you discuss the covenant to operate in the ordinary course of business?
Yeah, so in deals where there's an interim period between signing and closing, sellers are usually required to continue to operate their business in the ordinary course, consistent with past practice during that period. That's usually the standard language. And this has never been a controversial or heavily negotiated term historically, but COVID changed that. So deals which had been signed prior to the COVID outbreak had obviously not taken into account lockdowns or shifting to remote working or other significant changes imposed on businesses. When sellers took these actions that they'd never taken before, it raised legitimate questions about whether they were truly operating in the ordinary course. And this led to disputes between parties. But like with MAE clauses, buyers and sellers quickly adapted. And now it's become fairly common to carve out from these ordinary course interim covenants actions that a seller is required to take due to the pandemic. The other thing that's come up is that sellers will now often add that they only need to use commercially reasonable efforts to satisfy this requirement. Now, these clauses are definitely getting a lot more attention than they used to. Sellers want more flexibility to operate their businesses during the pandemic. And buyers, on the flip side, they want to continue to want to limit the changes that the seller can make. Because the more the sellers can do, it'll just require the buyer to have to close as a result. So the result is more time spent negotiating terms that used to be fairly uncontroversial.
Got it. Understood. So reps and warranties, they're always, a key part of closing a transaction. How have these changed during the pandemic?
Yeah, it's resulted in more reps and warranties from buyers. And on the flip side, more disclosures from sellers in response. So buyers are requesting additional reps and warranties relating to COVID. And COVID's effects on the target business, such as whether the target has received stimulus funds and other related tax matters, the impact on the workplace, the impact on the health of the workforce, the impact on the relationships with the target's customers and suppliers. Now, on the flip side, sellers are making more disclosures to the reps and warranties in their disclosure schedules, and are being very careful to disclose anything that existed or is potentially disruptive resulting from the pandemic. And on a related note, rep and warranty insurance has also been affected. Underwriters of these policies are obviously laser focused on this issue. And one of the first questions in any underwriter diligence call is how the pandemic's impacted the target's business. Yeah. It's also now common for rep and warranty insurance policies to exclude coverage for the effects of COVID and any specific reps and warranties that are COVID related.
Interesting. So for transactions that require regulatory approval, you know, how are the parties dealt with this? Because I'm sure some of these regulatory bodies have also been affected by COVID. They're working from home, having to operate their business remotely as well. I'm sure that's caused some delays.
Yeah, in general, because many of these regulators are operating remotely and with reduced staff, it's resulted in longer turnaround times, which buyers are factoring into their timeline now to get a deal done. So as an example, here in the U.S., if you're involved in a transaction valued at more than $92 million, you may need to make an antitrust filing, which is called a Hart-Scott-Rodino filing. Now, in order to complete a transaction with a Hart-Scott-Rodino filing, you technically have to wait a statutory waiting period of 30 days after the making the filing. Historically, you could request early termination of the waiting period. And if granted, you could close your deal a lot sooner, like 10 to 15 days after filing. Unfortunately, though, that early termination process slowed down a lot during the pandemic. And early this year, the government suspended early termination requests altogether. The result of that is larger deals taking longer to close. So parties are responding by, you know, very obviously agreeing to longer outside dates to close their deals. And they're preparing their regulatory filings a lot sooner so they can get them out to the regulators faster to lessen any delays.
Understood. So let's the structure of deals. Let's talk about that for a second. How have you seen those evolve, you know, during the pandemic? You know, maybe upfront payments versus back-end earnouts, for example.
Yeah, at the beginning of the pandemic, we definitely saw more parties considering earnouts or holdbacks and other mechanisms like that to address the increased uncertainty in the performance of target businesses. That obviously led to more extensive negotiations because earnouts, for example, raise a number of complex issues for sellers that need to be addressed. So it was causing some delay in deal negotiation. But in general, I think the use of earnouts and similar mechanisms have dipped a little bit as the impact of the pandemic became clear. You're still seeing them, but not necessarily just because of the pandemic. However, adjustments to the purchase price relating to working capital have been impacted, and we're still seeing that impact. Parties are taking more time to figure out the appropriate level of target working capital that needs to be left behind at closing by the seller. Right. That's because these target levels are often based on the target's historic balances over a recent period of time, like a trailing 12-month period. But given the recent volatility caused by COVID, for companies in many industries, looking at a trailing 12-month period right now might not make the most sense, since it's not an accurate reflection of the target's true working capital needs.
Understood. Well, Nick, thanks so much for joining me. This is really great.
No, thank you.
And to our viewers, thanks so much for joining us and be on the lookout for our next conversation series at Sorting Kissel.